Welcome to the Smichael Speaks podcast channel. I'm Joanne Smichael, and I'm delighted that you tuned in for relevant leadership learning that will help you continue to soar. Enjoy this episode. Dr. Jen Douglas is with us again today. She has this unbelievable passion for mental health and wellness. In addition to a PhD in clinical psychology from UC San Diego, she's authored a lot of papers on the subject. She's been interviewed by major news outlets, and she speaks at all sorts of conferences and conventions. So she is clearly an expert on this topic. Welcome back, Jen.
Thank you so much for having me back. I'm so excited to be here.
So last time you were here, we spent time talking about the nuances of diversity in therapy and on women's health issues, which both I have a passion for myself. But I invited you back today because you have a deep interest in mental health issues in young people. First thing, how do you define young versus young at heart? What do we call young in the therapy world?
That's a good question, because I think as I continue to embrace my middle age, the number keeps going up, what I consider young.
Yes.
Now, anybody under 40, 45, I'm like, oh, you baby. But I do have this particular interest in the folks who are in their 20s and even in early 30s now, because that particular population grew up with the internet and with social media for their entire real conscious lives. Mm-hmm. And the mental health effects of that are unfortunately very dire. Mm-hmm. And so combating the stressors that that age group has been up against is very important to me.
Mm-hmm. You know, even younger.
I was
surprised when a friend told me that her granddaughter has been fighting schizophrenia since her teens. And right now she's only like 20, 21.
Yeah.
And another friend told me that her son has struggled with depression since he was in his really early teens. Mm-hmm. I was living under the misconception that mental health issues didn't start, you know, until later in life. And that is so far from the truth.
Yes.
So far from the truth. So what is it that got you concerned about this little segment of, well, it's not a little segment, but this segment of our population?
So I originally went into mental health because I was fascinated by eating disorders and how to treat eating disorders properly. We talked about that a little bit the last time I was here. And I'm sorry, I'm going to tell you some statistics that are going to break your heart a little bit.
Okay.
So the average age, or not the average age, the age at which we start to see young girls diet is age 8.
Oh my Lord.
Yes.
Oh my God. That's when you should be loving Snicker bars and Twinkies and all that junk. Oh, yeah,
yes.
I can have some carrots and celery too.
Yeah, sure. But you should be carefree. Everything my child should be carefree. And so when I started to work with that population, because I trained in child psychology before I switched to adult, when I started to train in that population, you saw all of the things that you can see in adults, where sometimes these kids are up against, you know, they have traumas, they might be genetically predisposed to anxiety and depression. That doesn't, you know, have kind of an age when it necessarily automatically turns on. Stressors can turn on those genes earlier. So it really can occur very, very young. And we're lucky that there are such talented child therapists out there who can help these kids.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah.
Issues and trends. What are you seeing? What are you noticing related to? You mentioned social media, which I think is the bane of our existence.
Anyway. You're not wrong. And I'm on social media.
Yeah.
I consider my therapist social media account, where I share about mental health, to be like the salmon swimming upstream against all the bad stuff. That's how I picture it. So let's talk about the brain and how the brain was developed, because there's a reason. I don't want anybody to blame themselves if they catch themselves in comparison and perfectionism and anxiety. Our brains were designed to keep us safe. And many, many years ago, when we were not in our air-conditioned, heated, safe houses, and we were living in a lot more food scarcity, we needed to constantly be on the lookout for issues of safety and issues of survival. So if somebody was collecting berries, in the whatever 1400s, they're collecting berries from a bush and on the side of the road, and I see them do that, and they eat them and they're delicious and they're fine, then great, I can go collect berries from that same bush. If they collect berries from that bush and get very, very ill, then I don't collect berries from that same bush. Our brain is designed to compare to other people to learn how to make our lives safe. Now, in the 1950s, when we were comparing to other people, the only people we had to compare were our neighbors, our family, and our friends. And once in a while, maybe we'd get a magazine that told us Audrey Hepburn did something, like, fine. And once a week, you'd see it at the checkout aisle, you'd read, a 30-page magazine, that was it, fine. Now, especially with these young people, they wake up, they grab their phone, and immediately they're met with Kim Kardashian's Christmas, like $4 million Christmas light extravaganza, and that's what we're comparing ourselves to.
Unrealistic standards.
Yes.
Totally unrealistic standards. Totally, totally. The other thing that I notice about social media is, people put up there, I love my boyfriend. I love my husband. He's the most wonderful thing in the world. Nobody puts up there, you know what? Carl didn't pick up his socks today and that got on my nerves. Or, he spilled coffee on the counter this morning and I had to wipe it up. People put up these glamorized, unrealistic portraits of their lives. And I wonder if faking it like that has an impact on the psyche.
Oh,
I just
absolutely.
wonder.
Absolutely. Well, I think we touched a little bit on women's mental health, especially during our last podcast, about the importance of authenticity and community. And so one of my favorite things that I have my clients do, so speaking about like the marriage conundrum, right? And the perfect idea on social media versus real life. So one of my favorite things to have clients do is when they're making new friends or when they're trying to deepen friendships, I say, don't tell them the perfect stuff. If they ask how you are, don't just say everything's good. Tell them the truth. Tell them a little bit about, oh, well, my husband's been working a lot and, I hate doing all the cooking at night because he's working late or whatever. Or he left his socks, out and it's driving me crazy. And as soon as you do that, I call it the ladder of trust. So you work your way up the ladder of trust. As soon as you come with some vulnerability, then the floodgates open and the other person gets more vulnerable too. And then you can get more vulnerable and you kind of climb up this ladder until you've built this really beautiful, supportive level of intimacy. Social media is the opposite of that, where there's no intimacy, there's just this sort of posturing and perfection and curation of our lives.
And it's scary. It's really, really, really scary. So how do you combat
So we're very big on mindfulness in modern therapy. And it's a wonderful thing. I like to give, credit where credit is due. We've stolen this from like Eastern Zen Buddhism. Let's be very, very clear. All these therapists are like, I invented this. I'm like, no, you
No,
didn't.
you didn't.
Absolutely not. And so really inviting people, I say, for me, the easiest thing is to just, I tell people to look up. So even from your house to your car, your office to the parking lot, put your phone in your pocket. Do not check your email and go look at some trees and some clouds for a second. Because we have been so used to this social media getting into every little nook and cranny in our lives that it's become very hard for people to unplug and remember what real life is like.
And that is frightening. That is
Yes.
frightening.
Yes, it
It
is.
tickles me when you see people walking down the street looking at their phones and they bump into other people. They bump into the light pole. I want to say,
Yes. I'm like, you're gonna
put your
get hit by a
damn phone
car.
down.
Like, what are you doing?
Exactly. I can't
Not good.
remember where we were recently, but we saw somebody riding their bike and texting and crossing an intersection. And I just thought, you know what? You've taken this too far. You've really taken this too far. So now I want to think about these age cohorts of young
Yes.
people, because there have to be different approaches to treatment
Yes. Yes.
that are appropriate for these different age cohorts.
Yes.
So what are some of them?
Well, so if you're talking about really young, if you're talking about the kiddos, we're talking, zero to 12. Then you actually have play therapy, which is really beautiful. It's a wonderful methodology because you're not going to sit a kid on the couch and say, "How are you feeling? Where do you find that in your body? Where's your tension?" That's not going to work. And what's beautiful is that children communicate through play. So a child will not come home and tell their parent, "Oh, I'm stressed," or "Oh, I'm depressed." They'll say, "Play with me." And the same thing happens in the therapy room, where if they're having trouble at school or they're feeling self-conscious, if they're playing with dolls, they'll play like the doll is having a hard time at school. And that's how you can learn a lot about what's going on with them. So it's a really beautiful thing. And it's non-threatening. I think a lot of people are intimidated by the idea of sending their kid to therapy, and it doesn't look like adult therapy. You don't have to worry about that. So those are the little guys. The teenagers, and I'm giggling because I am not cool enough to treat teenagers anymore. Like they see right through me. They're like, "You are 1,000 years old. You do not, you got the gray hair. It's not gonna work." But I used to pull it off. And for them, it's all about gaining trust. We have a lot of data that children, it's actually very natural. So children are supposed to go through this period in adolescence where they differentiate from their parents. It's important that they be able to leave the nest later. And so it's actually developmentally normal for those kids to think that their parents are not the smartest people in the world, not who they should be listening to. They need to do their own thing. So what's most important for mental health for teenagers is for them to have another trusted adult, whether that's a therapist, a teacher, an auntie, someone in the community, who they admire and can trust, who's outside of the parents. Can be a little heartbreaking as a parent, but it's normal. And so therapists there, it's all about gaining their trust so that they can be honest about their insecurities, about what's going on in the friend group, about if there is anything that's really bothering them. You want that fundamental level of trust first. And then with young people who are in that 20 to 30, 20 to 25, 20 to 30, then it's all about they're having to build this life and this identity in a world that doesn't look the same as when I or when you were that age. Everything is different and everything changes so rapidly now. And we have such an onslaught of information that our brains literally aren't designed to take in this much information.
And it's frightening. It is really frightening, the
Yes.
rapid fire pace
Yeah,
of
it is.
information and the crazy ways that people expect immediacy for everything. Everything is not
Yes.
immediate.
Yes.
Most things are not immediate. Like, take your time, take your time. Okay, I got a kid. Let's just say I do, who I think is depressed or anxious or, whatever.
Yeah.
How do I find treatment and
Oh.
assess the quality of treatment for my kid?
Yes, it's a great question. So, the number one thing I say to do is to ask around. So, ask your child's principal if they have therapists that they refer to. Ask your child's doctor. Ask your friends if they know anybody. Ask your church if they know anybody, because a known entity is such a beautiful thing. Therapists, it's like dating. You've got to find the right one. Sometimes you hit a lot of duds. And I think that's a huge barrier. My friends and my former clients, my clients will say, "Oh, my cousin needs a therapist, my dad needs a therapist," all these kind of things. And I go into my network and try to find a known entity. That's the first layer. Then beyond that, you're going to look, you can honestly, Google people who are in your area and have the specialty that you're worried about. So, if your child is really into sports and has a lot of anxiety about performance, you can actually find sports psychologists for kids. That exists. If it's a young girl and she's worried about body image and you think she would trust a woman of color because she's a girl of color, then you look for that. My website, if you go to it, is all about intersectionality and perfectionism and high achieving women. That's what's on my website. If you Google that, That's what you're gonna find.
And just go ahead and tell them your web address.
I
Tell them.
can't, well, it's drjenniferdouglas.com, and there's a whole course on there about perfectionism that you can take. It's
Yes, there
wonderful.
is.
So I get my teaching sort of passion out. But what really matters, so after you make that first kind of initial research into who you might want to see, then you want to actually show them to your kid. You want to, have them look at the profile and say, "Oh, mom, that person doesn't look cool." Da, da, da. Like, fine, that's totally fine.
Right.
Just like you and I would look at a website. Like, when I see somebody and they're a therapist and they're like super put together and they've got the full hair, people can't see me, but like, I don't wear makeup. And there are wonderful therapists who do look like that. That's fine. Like, don't judge a book by its cover. And they're probably not going to relate to how I wake up and I'm on Zoom 20 minutes later. Like, it's a very different lifestyle. So it's just, you're looking for someone who you feel like you can connect to. And your kids are no different. And then most therapists offer 20 minutes over the phone or over Zoom where they meet you. And I often suggest that parents do that. And then also, if their child's a teenager, bring your kid along to see if they get along with the therapist. That's the most important thing. But unfortunately, there's a lot of trial and error because you got to find the match.
Oh my goodness, yes. It is just like you said, it's like dating. Very much so.
It is.
Now, I have to wait. Let me go back to what I was thinking about. When you were talking about resources for finding someone, I know that the American Psychological Association has on their website, like find a therapist. I mean, it's better than they named it something better than that, but I know that APA, American Psychological Association, does have that on their website. I have heard of NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. I know that they provide resources and support. Are there other organizations that are designed specifically where their mission is around helping younger people?
There are, and they're going to vary by community. And it's a wonderful thing because you can get a lot of in-person support. And then there are also situations where, say, like I work with LGBTQ populations. And so if there's a kid and they're in the middle of a state that does not have a very large population, if they live on a farm in Kansas, they're not going to have a huge community necessarily, just statistically speaking. And so there are also virtual communities in that way. So again, we go towards the sort of subsections of culture that if that kid identifies with, can be helpful. So I'm thinking of, for instance, in the Bay Area, we have like the San Mateo Pride Center and the San Francisco Pride Center are wonderful centers for youth. There are also youth centers. There's the Community Health Council in Palo Alto that does mental health for all kinds of different diagnoses, autism, anxiety, depression, et cetera. So looking in your community for what there is, and generally those organizations have groups, which is a wonderful place to start. And then if you find a group or find that community resource helpful, they're a great resource to find individual therapists as well. Oh, can I mention something about affordability? Because that's a huge barrier for many
Of
people with
course.
therapy. Thank
Yes.
you. Because I wish I knew this, and I wish everyone on earth knew this. So therapy can. So the other thing that you can do is insurances often have lists of therapists, but sometimes they are outdated or inaccurate. And sometimes the insurance doesn't fully cover it. The biggest life hack for finding therapy that is affordable, if it is not something that's in your budget, is find a local graduate school that trains therapists.
How interesting. That's like
Yes.
going to the local dental school to get your teeth cleaned because they're training
Yes,
dentists. Oh my goodness.
exactly. Okay, when
Ah.
I was training, I gave therapy for $10 an hour. I
I
no
love
longer
that.
charge $10 an hour.
Well, I'm
And
glad.
if it's a, yes, and if it's a good school, you're having licensed therapists and professors watching tapes of this. Some watch tapes, some don't. But we were literally getting advice for what to do from our advisors, where for an hour of therapy, we were getting 20 minutes, 25 minutes of guidance from a therapist with 20 years experience. So
Oh, I love
go
that. I
get your
never knew that
$20 an hour
existed.
therapy. Yes, it's
I never
wonderful.
knew that existed. How cool is that?
Yes, it's fantastic.
Okay, so we got the person in therapy. We got the young
Yes.
person in therapy. Well, we still have to live with them. Like, you still got to live with them. So, what suggestions or strategies do you have for parents or guardians or whomever has to live with them for helping them face their mental health challenges? What do you do?
Oh my gosh. There's a wonderful book. I don't know if I have it behind me. It's called How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk. It's wonderful. And they have it
Repeat
for,
that, please.
yeah, How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk.
Okay.
It's wonderful. It's a yellow book. They have it on audiobook. If you don't like, I listen to it on audiobook. It's great. They have it for little kids. I think they even have a teen version. And it's wonderful because the advice here is very, very different based on the age of your child. So when they're little, you want to be getting down on the floor and playing with them. Like that is how kids feel better. That's how they heal. That's how they connect. As they get a little older, you know, we're talking about 10, 12-ish, 13, then you're going to want to really connect and say, oh, you know, you're talking about interest. You know, I have talked, I know so much about unicorns and fairies. I can't even tell you. My daughter is 6. Woo-wee, there is like a whole situation, okay? It's fine. We're drawing at night. We watch drawing videos on YouTube and draw like fairies together. Like, this is how she connects to me. Great. Fantastic. When they become teenagers, you want to be what's called a houseplant parent. So I'm pointing to my houseplant behind me for folks who can't see. And so a houseplant parent is around and accessible, but does not take up space. And they're not, you're not. Your 15-year-old doesn't come home and you're like, hey, how was school? What'd you learn? What happened with your friends today? It will drive them insane. That's how you get the door slamming and all this stuff. But you want to be there and available when they're having a tough time.
I
Houseplant
like
parenting.
that.
It's great.
Houseplant parent. I like that.
You still have dinner together every night, but coming at them with all the questions is just a recipe for disaster.
I like that.
So.
Houseplant parent. I appreciate you coming back to talk about something that's so important. This is my belief, and I'm sure you have more accurate statistics than what I'm pulling out of my ear. But I think 90% of us are touched by mental illness in some way or another, whether it's me, myself, I, family, friends, and
Yes.
whether it's depression, anxiety, whatever, and whomever, it
Yes.
touches so many lives. And we have to continue to surface these conversations
Yes,
and
absolutely.
continue to destigmatize mental health issues.
Yes.
Now, I want you to come back one more time because you got this workbook and we haven't gotten to
Eventually
talk about
talk
that.
about this.
Yeah, because that thing about perfectionism, I think that's tied to mental health.
Just a bit. Yes. Especially women. Yes.
Yeah. So, are you up for another visit?
Let's do it. Let's do it. I love coming. This is wonderful. This is not work. This is just fun.
This is fun for both of us. So thanks again, Jen. Two things.
Yes.
Your website address
Yes.
again, and there was an organization that you mentioned to me when I was
Yes.
talking to you about my friend whose grandchild is
Yes.
schizophrenic. What
Yes.
was that organization?
Okay, so for folks, I used to work at one of these. They're fantastic. So they're all over the country, and it's not a particular organization, but it's a particular type of treatment for folks with
Okay.
schizophrenia. It's called Assertive Community Treatment
Assertive
ACT
Community Treatment
is the
Act. Okay.
acronym. Yes. And it works particularly well for young adults, and it is phenomenal because it has wraparound services, it has activities during the day, it has ways that we make sure that people are taking medication properly, that they're being seen by a team. It's just it changes lives. It's wonderful.
Thank you. And your web address again,
My web
please.
address is drjenniferdouglas.com, and Douglas has one S. Thank you
Dr.
for asking.
JenniferDouglas.com. So thank you, and I will see you again very, very soon.
Can't wait.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. I hope you got tools that you'll actually use and share. Subscribe if you haven't already. I add new and relevant leadership learning all of the time. If you haven't visited the Smichael Speaks YouTube channel, check it out. There's all sorts of new content. All of this is virtual leadership learning that will help you soar.